You don't say. You don't say. All right, bye.
Who was that?
I didn't say.
Trexploration.
Hello and welcome back to Trexploration. I'm Albie.
I'm Chris.
I'm John.
We have the beautiful John Irons with us. Oh my goodness, even more beautiful. I like
In
it. You
house.
Got a beard.
I does.
John's
vaguely symmetrical, which is what I was going for.
He did it just for this live chat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great.
We're getting closer to the mustache level, so.
Yeah, I almost. Think that, once we get the mustache level, right there. Just some of that. Some of this, some of that. We are talking about Star Trek Con, episode 7. What's episode 7? I didn't even pull my notes up for this.
I am Marla.
I am Albie.
I am Chris.
I have spoken.
I am conscious.
All right. So, wow.
I am conscious, Noonien Singh.
Thank you, John, for joining us. John Irons, a beautiful John Irons, Captain Game Show himself, published author of...
That is
1,700
true.
Esoteric syllables about your mama. See, I can read backwards. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I have a copy
thank
of that
you,
somewhere.
Thank you
for
joining us.
Me too.
So, I've been joining us for Con. Have you been following Con the whole time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been watching it. I've been listening to it. I've been watching it in my mind's eye.
Yeah. What have you been doing? YouTube or podcast feed?
Podcast. I was trying to think that I'd do YouTube on any of them, but no, a podcast on all of them.
Have we? I don't believe we've discussed with you, Con, on our show, John. Have we?
No. I through a series of timing errors and misadventures, I haven't actually, despite being on vaguely on two Star Trek shows, I haven't discussed this Con radio drama on either of them. And, you know, I was worried that I wouldn't get my chance since both you guys were like, both shows were like, yeah, I think we're done. We'll check in at the end.
It's funny because I was wondering, I've gotten the hot takes from Neek and from Scott and from Rick. And I was trying to think back if you were on that Star Trek podcast talking about it. So I guess we have an exclusive, a Trexploration exclusive. What does John Irons think, broad strokes, of the Con audio drama thus far? He's already alluded to the fact that, you know, some of us are a little less than thrilled at this point.
Yeah. I think my enjoyment has run a similar trajectory to what it seems like most of you guys, which is like first episode or two, you're like, oh yeah, this is really good. And as it's gone on, maybe lessened, but I don't think it's to the degree that, I don't think it's lessened for me to the degree that it seems to have for a lot of you. I don't know if it's because I'm, I don't know, like, I don't have a vested interest or as much, like, much of a vested interest as far as where he ends up. Like, I know where he's going to, obviously, like everybody does. But as I have said oft on this show and others, you know, I kind of issue the concept of canon. Not completely, of course, but, you know, I'm not so much worried. Well, this doesn't line up because, you know, this happened in February and this was supposed to be like, I don't care about stuff like that. Like from a lot of stuff I will let go. So stuff that would maybe bug you and kind of take you out of it, I'm either blissfully ignorant of or kind of care less about. Overall, I would say I'm enjoying it. There are some things that happen in the show that I'm like, well, that's just dumb. That doesn't make sense. But overall, I would say it's holding together pretty well. You know, if I were to give it a letter rating so far, B-, C+. I'm entertained. I'm intrigued enough to see where things like how things resolve. Now, if that is definitely influenced by the fact that I know that there's only 9 episodes, right?
Yeah.
There's only going to be 9 episodes. Like if this were just like a series and, you know, I'm expecting, I don't know, 20 episode season or something, then I would probably bail on it. But I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued enough to listen to another 3 episodes. I'm intrigued enough to listen to another 2 episodes. Like I can, yeah, I'm in it enough. Yeah, I guess that in broad strokes, that's kind of where I am with it.
I think I'm right there with you on the, there's only 2 more left after this, so I might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if they get me at the end and I go, oh, okay, now I'm in with the last episode. They pull
just
me in
time.
Yeah.
Muted Chris.
Chris, we can't hear you.
Sorry, it was because I was yawning before. I was being polite. Now but I think what you guys are saying is the exact response that Nick Meyer, Kirsten Beyer, and David Mack were hoping for when they were writing this story.
They wanted people to be like, I guess. Maybe
I guess
I'll finish
I mean,
it.
It's almost over. I guess we'll finish it sort of maybe. If we have to.
Well, we're on episode 7. So in case it's been a while since you listened, I think it came out 2 days ago now as we record.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, could you give the folks at home an episode recap for
sure.
Star Trek
so
on episode 7, I Am Marla.
Written by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack, based on a story by Nicholas Meyer, directed by Fred Greenhalgh, starring Naveen Andrews as Khan, Ren Schmidt as Marla, Sonia Cassidy as Rosalind Lear, and Maury Sterling as Ivan, among others. Now, this is where I know we're live, so I'm going to be looking down at my phone because I didn't really update the rundown, so everything is here on my phone because I was a bad, bad host. So if I'm not making good enough eye contact or... Albie, you can fix it in post.
Oh, sure.
All right.
I got a button.
Hey, we're back on the Excelsior, and Lear is talking to Tuvok. It's right where we left off with them when she revealed that Del Mondo was the source of her audio recordings about Khan's time on SETI Alpha 5. And Lear is all like, Del Mondo gave me the logs from a salvage vessel because, you know, I did my PhD thesis on augment discrimination. It was a very sexy topic, and he was intrigued, I guess, by my diving into this otherwise unmined area of academic esoterica. And Tuvok is like, no, you're a liar and I'm going to keep spying on you. And Lear has an episode where she's like, no. And it was exactly like that. Like, I might as well have been on the episode. We then rejoin the SETI gang with Marla hoping Khan will recognize the danger that Ivan poses. If we recall, in the last episode, Ivan stomped one of the Alborians to death, and they have him in a trance in a cave deciding his fate. The Alborians remand Ivan to Khan's custody, though, and Ivan is like, Khan, you have changed. He admits to killing Hugo. Remember Hugo in episode 1, he tossed him off the cliff. Khan is like, you stand between us and salvation, Ivan, and you will pay the price for your murder of the Alborian. We then learn that Khan and Marla have named their daughter Kali. Khan gives a long-winded speech about gods and eternity and yada, yada, yada. Kali allows him to glimpse the outlines of eternity and blah, blah, blah. They then argue about Western canon poets. Freaking Coleridge, am I right? Meanwhile, Joachim, Paolo, and Erica are listening to some awful Europop music and then run into Alborians who tell them about the escape ship. Khan confronts Del Mondo and is all like, you told my young people about the ship to circumvent my authority and de facto seal our alliance. Pretty sneaky, sis. In sickbay, Mado won't eat. She has just lost her baby in the cave-in, if you recall, and she and Ursula lament that loss. Ursula rails against Khan's many failures. Ursula then visits Ivan in prison, and he says he plans to invite Khan to his cell and feign recalcitrance. He will then poison Khan with some cyanide-spiked wine and assume rule. His first order of business, kill all Alborians. But Khan is like, don't you think I know when someone offers me a poisoned cup? I am the master. I'm so smart. I'm an augment, remember? Also, I only wear this alliance like a cloak, as long as it serves us and our people. I will shrug it off when it suits me, but you don't get to see that. And he banishes Ivan to live alone on the surface to wander and die. Come! Meanwhile, Marla takes a dip in the underground hot springs in Cavetopia and gets attacked by SETI eels. She is rushed to the infirmary, but too late. They cannot remove the eel in her brain without destroying her ability to carry Kali to term. She orders Khan to let them put her into a vegetative state so she can remain alive for the sake of Kali. Khan rages and cries, but Marla is like, I am Marla, and I command this. The injection is given, and as Marla fades, Khan swears that he will get Kali off the planet. He weepily recites what I assume is a Caldridge poem. The end of this episode. This is the 7 of 9 episode, Albie. You should have liked this episode.
I have to get an extra point for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of stuff happening in this episode. I guess we're getting towards the end, so it was about time that Marla shuffles off this mortal coil. We know that her death was coming, or we knew anyway. But
that was her death scene, but she's still technically alive, right?
It's her brain death scene.
Her body. And who knows what might happen with her mind. You never know. She might snap out of it. It's writing, right?
Yeah, well, they say that they put her into this state so that the eel wouldn't be able to grow any longer because her brain activity is now muted, but it's enough to keep the baby healthy and they can, bring Kali into the world.
It slows down. The eel is still going to do its thing. It's just doing it slower.
Okay.
It's like freezing or like keeping somebody in cold water if they're bleeding. Like it's still happening. It's just a slower process. And so, yeah, it'll allow her to get the baby to term.
Wow.
So that was the synopsis. Did we have first impressions or?
Yeah, first impressions. I'm going to ask John first, but I'm just going to let you know I have many questions because I'm very confused in this episode. But hopefully our discussion will help me through it. And sharing my pain will help me.
I'm confused as to why you're confused, but I can't wait to hear how you're confused.
Let's find out why. So John Irons, first impressions on Star Trek Con episode 7, I Am Marla.
Marla was probably one of my favorite characters in this. And obviously you knew that she was going to die and you didn't know when. So I was hoping for, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
But again, inevitable is inevitable and so it goes.
It's inevitable.
I guess I like the whole, I'm gonna poison him and then I can clearly not choose one from you. And he got him with the old rope-a-dope, got him with the switcheroo.
You know that I know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna.
That was nice. I didn't like Ivan as a character. I mean, obviously you're not supposed to like him as a character, but like, I didn't necessarily like the character of Ivan. I felt he was kind of cartoonishly bad, but I did appreciate that his voice was different enough that I could distinguish him from other actors, which isn't always the case in this.
Nostrovia.
Yeah. Like I'm sorry. Most of the women sounded like the same. Maybe it's just me. It's entirely possible that it's just me.
It got confusing for
but
me
it was
there.
Confusing. Like mm-hmm. when Ursula went, to, I was like, I didn't know. I was like, wait, who's in there? Why is he telling?
Was still talking after she was dead.
Yeah, I thought it was Marla. I was like, how is he telling Marla the whole scheme? It's like, you on my side this whole. I'm like, no, she's not. She's on the opposite. Oh, it's not even you. Mm-hmm. It's the other you. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I did not appreciate the choice of music, but again.
Cool It Now.
I love. Was it Cool It Now? That was.
I don't know. That's not
Cool It Now. It was not Cool It Now. Like
that
I know Cool It Now. I'm a friend of Cool It Now. That, sir, was no Cool It Now.
Well, I appreciated that they stuck with like maybe 1982 version of modern music. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't go for now music then. They went for them music then.
Yeah, but they could have used 60s future Therapin, whatever funky music. Because clearly any music would have worked since the what's the name of the arms? The arms?
Rick calls them the Elbonians, but the Elborians.
The Elborians.
The Poralescent.
Architectro.
Lavender beings.
Yeah.
Yes, the Poralescent. Yes, the Poralescent lavender beings. Yes.
The Meeples. All of that was fine. Overall, I guess I enjoyed this episode, and it did. Like, I enjoyed it probably a little more than the last. I don't know. It never, like I said before, that never got like bad to me. But my interest did wane a bit, and now it's kicking up again.
All right. My interest did Garth a bit, so we have that going for us.
Cadet, listen,
party
Linda,
on, Chris. Ed's,
at first, I thought it was Kate Bush.
And then they realized
running up that hill.
I feel like, Stranger Things in order to C&D. So they had to.
Paramount, come on. They probably own a back catalog of some real music, right, that they could have used.
And
probably.
Welcome, listen, Linda, to the live broadcast. Thank Cadet you for joining us.
Ooh, speaking of, I got to check and tell later. What could it be?
Oh, it came. Ooh, it came.
I don't know.
All right.
Chris, your first impressions on this episode. My first impressions will be a lot of questions, but your first impression.
My first impression, honestly, this one it was a tick up. I enjoyed this one better than the previous two. I think it was its own episode, as we said in like episodes 5 and 6 were really one contiguous story. So they were perfect to do together. But, or was it 6 and 7? This is 7. So
6, 7.
Yeah, we needed 6, 7. We needed something to happen. And this was one of the pivotal moments in Khan's story. So I'm glad that we got there. I'm glad that the Excelsior stuff was a bit less this time, because I find that distracting at best. And I think that Tim was pretty good, but I'm going too far into the weeds. First impressions, an improvement over the last couple of episodes. And I found myself enjoying this one. How about you, Albert Mark Burge?
I listened 4 times, as I do. Admittedly, I fell asleep twice during the middle 2 listens, but I got a full one at the beginning and a full one at the end.
Those middle 2 listens, they'll get you every time, man.
That's why I only listen once. So I fall asleep in between. So it's all okay. Contiguous.
Multiple times there's something about audio dramas. It just makes me want to drift off to sleep. But like I did have episode 8 and 9 queued up, but I didn't make it. I was like, I didn't like that Marla died, but I did like that part of the episode, and I thought it was good. So it made me want to invest more time. So I put off those other 2 episodes. So I'm still not ahead.
Yeah,
I'm
me neither.
As live as everybody else. But there was confusion. Like, John, you mentioned the voices. I got confused who's who. And I'm just trying to think, what the hell's going on? And that's my first impressions. Chris, tell the people stuff and things before we get into our deep dive.
Our SETI Alpha Jive, is that what you mean?
This is SETI Alpha Jive!
We want to know what you think. Reach out to us here live now, like our cadet, listen, Linda. That's on youtube.com/@trexploration, where you can subscribe, like, share. You can also support the show here on the YouTube channel or on Patreon. That's patreon.com/trexploration. You can see what kind of tiers of support we have there. There are many ways that you can support the show. You can also hype this video.
Hype the video!
And super chat it. I don't know what super chatting is. Susie Q's on the line. She says, hello, beautiful people. Why, yes, I am beautiful. Thank you, Susie Q.
Yes, we have many beautiful people here in the chat and on camera.
She's always explaining what all this stuff means to us. So
she knows things.
Stacy, rescue us. But become a YouTube member. You can do the hypes and the super chats. You can also find us on Blue Sky. That's trexploration.bluesky.social. You can send us emails, trexplorationpod@gmail.com. Send us voicemails and audio messages there as well. And, of course, pictures of you and your lovely families and your pets. You can always, always send us some physical things to the post office box. That's P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. I've still not gotten a vial of diametaceous earth, and I would like to get some of that, please. So P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. I got to ill-proof my house, people.
This is true.
And at the end of this live recording, Albie will pop up various codes, QR codes that you can support the show through. That's a PayPal one and a Zelle one and a Venmo one and a Cash App one. And you'll also find links for all of that stuff below. You can also send the aforementioned shoebox full of 20s to the P.O.
Box.
542 Bayport, New York. Don't get greedy. 11705.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but you know what? Don't do fives or ones. Come on. Don't embarrass yourself.
I got a kid to support.
Right. You know? We're dancing as fast as we can here, Doc.
You need to at least tip me, you know, 20s. That's all I'm saying. I'll cry if you want me to.
We'd like to thank everybody who is listening and sharing and supporting the show, and that includes our patrons and our lifetime member. Our lifetime member, the Omnipotent Willard. Hi, Willard. How you doing? And the rest of our crew of intrepid Trek Explorers. That includes our cadet, Listen Linda, who's with us live now, and our other cadet, Rick Tatro, our lieutenant commander, Scott Seligman, Cosplay Dad, and Kristen Daljo, and of course, our captain, Captain Charles from Texas, Captain on the Bridge. Thank you, one and all, for all of your continued support of Trek Exploration, as well as to everyone who is on our Patreon community for free and also here on the YouTube channel, following, liking, sharing, subscribing. Please subscribe here to get exclusive content. We're going to doing an after show after this. I think we're going to be talking about Only Murders.
Only Murders in the building.
Albie
the
can't
penultimate
stop talking
episode of season. About, is it five now?
I think it's five.
I believe so. Wow. I believe it is, yes.
We got stuff to talk about.
So Susie's already schooling us. You can't hype live, but you can hype if watching later.
Okay.
So no hyping now, but hyping later.
Hyping later.
Hyping later. So that's my spiel, and we thank everybody for being members here on the YouTube channel. That's where we are. Albie.
And we'll read all super chats, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Well, we wouldn't have much else to talk about.
It's a very affordable way to advertise.
Marl is dead, so I don't know what else there is to say.
I have a question first.
Oh, is she dead? Yeah, what is your question? Why are you confused?
Okay, originally the kid's named Penelope, and then it's named what?
Kali, K-A-L-I.
Kali.
She's
so
like she's
Penelope's
like a goddess.
A Kali. I thought Penelope was a Bijan.
Ah, well, it happens, you know. I mean, it's when you're in the world of these purebreds, it gets pretty cutthroat. So, if we could come up, if we can come with a Maltese Bijan Collie mix, we might win the AKC Westminster Dog Show.
Oh, the thing they put on after the parade.
Yes, yes.
When I play the replay of the parade,
I want to say that joke again.
Okay, John. Wait,
the Westminster God Show.
Oh, the Westminster God Show.
Kali. Like they're naming Akeem, the great Kali.
It's Joakim.
They're just pulling out old wrestling names for these augments, I think.
Let me see if I can find a picture of Kali on my phone. I'm sure I can.
I think I know what a Kali looks like, right?
Kali, goddess.
The great Kali, you know him?
That's
he was
good.
In that.
It's pretty good.
She's the goddess of death, by yes. Just so you know.
Well, that makes sense. Maybe that's why we don't like her character.
Here's the image of Kali.
Well, I think, yeah.
That's Kali.
That's the great Kali.
Which is
okay.
A little bit ominous.
I remember
it looks
different.
Got Ivan's head in her hand. Or is that that's something else? Okay.
I don't know. You don't want to get canceled.
She's vanquishing her enemies. There's no portent in that at all, is there? I wonder if Rosalind Lear is going to give a giant soliloquy about how she is the goddess of death.
Maybe.
Listen, Linda says Penelope is an augment. She is that and a sweet kid. So her augment genes are going to come out one day and kill us all. But at least we loved her while we could.
So they just changed the baby's name halfway through.
That's how I took it.
I think Marla was joking. I think that maybe she didn't want Kali, but they decided, okay, we have to name this kid. So she was like, oh, you mean Penelope? Ha, 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 ha. I know it's Kali. Connie.
I was into Penelope. I was like, that's
so
a great
confusing.
Callback.
It's just such a confusing way to
I thought it was great. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that they went.
You have a Penelope bias.
Exactly. There was some late stage listening to Trexploration, and they wanted us to like it better.
Exactly.
So they actually went back in time and edited the show so that our screeners and this would have the name Penelope in it, just because they wanted to woo me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's with editing plausible. Technology, now you can go in and change a word, and it sounds exactly right.
I mean, we do have flying DeLoreans, so.
Yes. Well, it's the future. Happy Back to the Future Day, month. There you go. Good, good, good.
My pin.
Hopefully everyone is celebrating.
John is out of the loop.
No. Yeah.
He's got Back to the Future Blue on.
I've still got my Back to the Future Broadway show water bottle in the closet.
Awesome.
Oh, there we go.
I'm thinking about watching the full screen DVD of Back to the Future Part 1 tonight after we get off here, because it's an open mat. So actually, this is one of the rare cases where the full screen version actually contains more information than the widescreen version, because the top and bottom are cut off to make the widescreen Back to the Future. So the actual open mat square is the way you can see more of it.
That's when you get all those bottomless shots of Michael J. Fox that have set the internet on fire. That open mat gets you in trouble every time, man.
Exactly. Did anybody get his book? I want to get his book.
I haven't gotten his book. I saw that it was out. I do want to get it.
It's a new book?
I believe.
Yeah, I think it's called Future Boy. It's about his time with Back to the Future. I saw him on Colbert. That's a good interview if you get time to watch.
I think they timed everything for the 40th anniversary. They did a release, that Steelbox release, that looks insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They only had, I think, 5,000 made, 5,585. So it already instantly sold out, but I'm going to still try to get it eventually.
And so it's already sold out. I was thinking about getting it myself, but who am I kidding?
You know, people buy it to sell it, though, too. So you might pay an extra $100, but you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and then they also had something else that came out. It was Michael J. Fox's book and the box set.
A Casio came out.
And it's also Christopher Lloyd's 87th birthday, I think.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, Mr. Christopher Lloyd.
Too. Yeah.
Him and I shared about 5 seconds together, and I cherish it. Well, we got
cherish
a
is a word I used to describe.
Cool it now.
I don't know, I guess 2 degrees of separation from Christopher Lloyd. I'm like, wait, did I meet Christopher Lloyd? No, I didn't.
You were the original Marty McFly before Eric Stoltz.
I knew it. I met Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, awesome.
The late great Gilbert Gottfried?
The late great Gilbert Gottfried, because when I was in New York, I interned at PBS, and there was a show called Cyber Chase, and he was the voice of Digit.
Wow.
The bird on Cyber Chase.
Yes.
And actually, it was just weirdly coincidentally.
You worked on that?
I didn't work on it. I interned there. I didn't really do anything of note. And that's not where I met him. I just happened to meet him walking down the street.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
It's like, oh, Mr. Garfrey. Hi, how's it going?
Like, hi, how you doing?
Yeah, I was like, weird, big fan. I work at PBS. I was like, what do you do at PBS? I work on blah, 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 blah. But also on that show, Christopher Lloyd, who I did not meet in person, but that's my 2 degrees of separation from Christopher Lloyd.
There you go. And Gilbert Gottfried was like, "Why, hello, my name's Gilbert Gottfried. Wait a minute. Oh, hello, my name's Gilbert Gottfried."
Surprisingly, a beautiful soprano.
Yeah, I've gone down that rabbit hole. Gilbert Gottfried's real voice on YouTube, and it's just his voice.
That's how he talks. I mean, he cranks it up a little bit, obviously, but that's pretty much his voice.
But it worked for him. Great guy. He played what? Zazu, is that right?
No. You're
that thinking... was Harvey Korman. Somebody gets that joke somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. He plays Digit on Cyber Chase. You're thinking
of
the different bird on
so Lion King. He would typecast as birds.
Oh, wait, he was a bird on that? Oh,
he was Iago in
Iago, that's
Aladdin.
Yep. That's the most famous, I think.
He has played a couple of birds.
Wow. He was Iago in Macbeth, too.
So help me through these beats. They're building a ship.
Yeah.
In Sunless Sea.
Uh-huh.
And to launch it, they got to explode where they live.
Well, first, here's the thing.
Yeah, let's go through it in order.
Okay, so they got to drink enough of the water to have enough room.
Is that how it's evaporating?
For the ship. And they're thinking by the time we are, you guys drink enough, we've determined that enough of the water will be down to have enough room for the ship to be built.
Where are they putting your urine?
Got me. I mean, there's no life in that sea. So maybe if they piss in it, it'll spur some kind of.
Keep the level, right?
I don't know what's going on this. That to me was whole. Oh, wait. Susie Q says that Gilbert Gottfried was a beetle in Thumbelina. Is that true?
Nice.
I'm going to accept her word on that. That sounds right.
I mean, if I was going to catch a beetle in Thumbelina.
I consider myself fairly well-versed in animated stuff, but I hadn't seen Thumbelina in forever, so I couldn't tell you.
No, I saw the VHS today at the thrift store. I did not pick it up. I'm looking for all the Barbie movies right now. I mean, that's what me and Rennie are going through.
Ah, you know where I went? I went thrifting today, too, and yesterday. I go to Savers, which is usually adjacent to Costco.
Is that E-R or O-R?
Savers, E-R-S, Savers. Like, you're going there because you're a saver. And I'm always looking for my Enterprise novels. And they change the books there quite a bit. So, because I guess they keep getting them in and they keep cycling. So I go once a week to try, maybe every 10 days to see. And they're on the way home. So it's just nice after a long day's work to stop in and see if I get a nice treat. And I went yesterday to the one in Bay Shore.
Treat.
And they had a bunch of Star Trek books. I think about 12 or 13 next-gen books, which weren't there last week. No Enterprise novels. And then tonight, like hours ago, I went to another one that's closer to my house on the way home because I was in a different town today and I was coming home a different way. And I went there and they had a copy of Wrath of Khan, which I have behind me, which I've showed on the show before, which is apropos for tonight. But you know what they didn't have? An Enterprise novel. How do I live? How do I make it? But there was a nice lady there, and she chatted me up about Wheel of Time. So I was doing some Wheel of Time.
Are you still looking for Jason X books for me?
Jason X?
Yeah, I sent you a message.
Jason, like,
yeah, like, and part 10 where he's in space, and then
that's my favorite. That's the greatest Friday the 13th movie ever made. Are you kidding?
I agree, it's my favorite. I love it. I watch it probably 2-3 times a year. But they actually wrote like 3 or 4 sequels to that movie.
You sent me a thumb. That's what that thumbnail was. Oh, if I see those, I will pick those up, but I'm going to keep them for me.
Okay, well, if you get a double copy, but they're going for ridiculous money. So if you get it at a reasonable price, you know.
Okay, if I see a Jason X, wow, that's crazy stuff.
Yeah, I read the first sequel, probably the first 3 or 4 chapters. It was pretty good. There was a PT Cruiser in it. It was interesting.
Wow, you and your PT Cruisers, man.
Love PT Cruisers. They don't love me.
What is a PT Cruiser doing on a space station? You seem uniquely qualified. Uniquely qualified to answer that.
This is on Earth, too.
You have a PT Cruiser on your space station, I believe.
It's electric, I think. Ooh, an electric PT Cruiser. Then it might not explode.
If it's Earth, too, do they have, like, parallel development?
Did they explode?
No, it was just they escaped the Earth that was because, you know, pollution and stuff, and they had a...
Right, at the end of, not to spoil Jason X, but at the end of Jason X, Jason basically burns up in the atmosphere and is...
But his mask lands in the lake.
His mask lands in the lake, yep.
And it has a few of those nanites that rebuild stuff.
Oh, so they're going to rebuild
him. Start rebuilding themselves and replicating themselves before they replicate him.
Oh.
And there's a lot of pressure down there because it's a very deep lake and it's very cold, so it takes a long time.
I see.
But eventually he does start. That's me, John, not someone in your apartment.
John has got his dad ears on right now. He's making sure.
Did somebody touch the thermostat?
Close that window.
Sorry, could y'all hear that? Can you hear this? Can you hear what's happening?
No, I was doing. So let's go through it beat by beat, Chris. That will really help me, I think, and maybe other people who are struggling to understand what the hell is going on.
All right, so let's just talk about the Excelsior stuff because that's the first beat. I thought
that
was
a strong
beat because I think that Tuvok was good in it. I think that Tim did a good job, and the fact that I thought that Lear sounded convincing, like I thought that might be the end of it, but when he gave the whole spiel that I know you're lying. And we're just going to keep on reviewing these tapes together until we find out what we find out. But you're not going to fool me, sister. That was a little bit of a surprise to me. Do you think that she would have gotten away with it had it been anybody else besides Tuvok, because I think I was kind of buying it. And I was like, are we wrong about her being the daughter? Is she really just like sexy academic?
It was very convincing. And I liked, I'm sure you guys appreciate the canon of this. He says, many, or maybe even most Vulcans can't lie, which is all you need. Sometimes you can, most of them can't. And I can absolutely understand. I can absolutely see if, you know, someone from one culture encounters somebody from like a group of people from another culture and all of them do this thing. They're like, oh, okay, well, all of them are like this. But like, no, just most of them. Most Vulcans can't lie. Some of them can. And that should just end all of the anger anytime a Vulcan lies or anytime someone says Vulcans can't lie. Because you're both right. It's fine.
Yeah. Anytime a Vulcan lies, we know he's a Romulan spy.
I was surprised they went back to that because now they've moved past Vulcans can't lie. So, but I like what you're saying.
But it's a nice like little cherry on top. And because most Vulcans can't lie, we're extra good at spotting liars. It's a nice little side effect superpower.
Yeah, apparently, they're a little Sherlock Holmes. They Tuvok is the pulse increasing and stuff. Right.
He's Robert De Niro from Meet the Parents. exactly. He's going to take her down to Chinatown.
I did like, well, what was that little scene where she was like, okay, don't lose control, don't something? She was narrating
that
struggle.
One, that's where they lost me a bit.
I was picturing she was like lighting up like Una because she's an augment for some reason. And like, I don't know, something augment going on.
I felt like she was going to lose control and smash the entire lab or something.
Cool it now.
She did. Needs to cool it now.
Kali
yes.
now.
Kali now.
So that's Kali, right?
Yeah, I got to think that Rosalyn is Kali.
If it's not, what are we doing?
I feel like that Rosalyn is the traditional Anglican translation of Kali.
That's what there, I was going to go for.
I think that's canon.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So Tuvok lets her know he's going to be in the logs.
Yeah, he's going to be all up in a business.
Yep. So next time they meet.
Well,
even playing ground, kind of. So I bought what she was saying, but it's a lie. So what is she lying about? Other than she's the baby and the alien escaped and maybe MacGyver's came back to life?
I don't think MacGyver's came back to life. I mean.
Okay. I'm still hopeful because she's pretty.
But I mean, but that would like.
It would undercut the death.
Yeah, well, I mean, it that would unravel Star Trek too, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, not if as long as Khan still believed it.
Aha!
But so they both got like Superman potted away. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe, maybe they sent her out, or she was. Maybe it was like the beginning of Star Trek 09, when Winona is giving birth to Jim, and then Thor dies. And then they have that beautiful music that always chokes me up every single time. And
they get you right away.
Yeah. God, always. Every time I watch them, I'm like, ugh! And then I have that on my Pandora. It comes up and I'm like, no, I'm working now. Skip.
It's like the beginning of Up. You can't not react.
I didn't really react to that.
What? Oh, my God.
You're heartless.
Monster.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? When you're part of a childless couple that tried to have kids and can't, it's not going to rip my heart out. You have
that
kids.
I mean, that so was sad, but missing. That wasn't the saddest part.
And then she dies, and yeah, we all die. It's okay.
Yeah. That and then all you have and then I'll in put your like heart a, is reinforced.
A gazillion balloons on my house, and it'll float up through the air, and some annoying Boy Scout will be there. And what a dumb movie that
was. I see
was.
It's one timeline for you. That might happen. Your house would be very
It's actually,
cute,
it's a reverse biography of me. Yeah. There you go. Anyway,
so
anyway, yeah.
What's up with these aliens? I like. What is his name? Darulo,
Zaldamo.
I think
Zaldamo. Still nobody Zaldamo? Called my Zaldamo. My Zaldamo reference from the last time. Nobody
yeah, I liked about. His culture's helping people who commit crimes and go astray than rather than punishing them. But I think Ivan Drago is probably beyond.
Young redemption. Well,
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I don't care what happens to him. Like, I'm like,
he's one dimensional.
I suspect that you know, Khan will rue the day that he let him just leave as opposed to killing him. And that will, you know, lead to part of the downfall of all of this.
Okay.
But eh.
Are they leaving him out there for maybe season two of this?
Huh?
Are they leaving him out there for season two of this?
I don't know if there's gonna be a season two. But like he just needs to come back pissed off and ruin something. There's so many ways this can go wrong. Like,
what is Khan's reticence to kill somebody? Like, he was going to exile Hugo first, and that was that. And now he's like, okay, Ivan, I'm going to exile you. Is he saying that he's doing it to show the Elbonians that he has compassion?
Yeah.
And he agrees with them, and does it just serve his purposes? Because he's admitted that he's just going along to get along, but he plans on betraying them too. As soon as they give him what he needs, they're done.
Yes.
So if Ivan hadn't tried to poison him, do you think he would have been like, "Come on, comrade, let's do this together"?
No, because Ivan is disobedient, and he can't have that. He didn't tell Ivan to kill, what's his name? Gomez, whatever. What's his name?
Hugo. Gomez. Right.
He didn't tell him to kill. He told him, like, I was like, well, you know, I took initiative. I'm a very plucky intern. Like, I know what you wanted me to do, even though you didn't have to say it.
I wish you would have said, you should have been more specific before you sent me out.
That's how good assistants are. They anticipate needs.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, yeah, and he's, yeah, his crime was basically the same as Hugo's. So his punishment was basically the same as Hugo's. I guess to answer your question, Chris, he is, because whether or not his people stop following him in the way that they should, I think he still thinks of himself as their leader. So unless there's no other choice, he's not going to kill them. The worst he'll do is, you know, force you to not live under the glorious rule of me, which is punishment enough. That's the worst thing that, you know, that's a fate worse than death, really.
When you're as egomaniacal as Khan is. But I feel like it shows you what a missed opportunity Ivan's character could have been, because he was really giving it his all in this speech when he was just like, you abandoned me and you betrayed me and you were my brother. And that should have been heart-wrenching at this point, like on episode 7 of 9. That should have been like a pivotal moment that the audience was just like, oh, these two brothers are having a falling out. And no, because you could never, ever care about Ivan, because he was just never more than a stereotypical cartoon bad guy. No matter how well the actor voiced it or the pathos that he tried to imbue Ivan with, it all fell flat.
I think it was the writing that failed that character.
Well. Yeah, and it also, it would have been more impactful maybe if it was a surprise. You know, if every indication was nothing but love, and then, you know, actually I have this deep-seated resentment, then maybe it would have meant more. But, I mean, it wasn't, like yeah, we know that's how you feel. Like, it's obvious that's how you feel. That's not, you know, so the effect was muted.
I think him being exiled just goes to prove that old adage, those who are exiled then pass it on and then exile others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've never heard that adage. Is it old or did you just make it up?
It's very old, but it has to do with exiling.
I did used to sometimes read Ad Age when I was in media, though.
Nice.
So, if you wanted to go piece by piece,
though. I would
sometimes
go down the exile at the
grocery Exile store. Island. That'd be good.
I'm confused.
That's where they kept the xylophones and the xenon, then the exile.
There's not that much in there, but that's why that.
So that's where Lionel Hampton wound up. Okay.
That volume is cheaper.
X-ray machines.
Oh my goodness gracious!
X-Files DVDs.
Ooh, I have many. They're $100 a season. True story.
Oh my goodness. Oh,
yeah, so what's next in this thing?
So yeah, so, so I, it's I so confusing.
Khan was first. Exiling him because, you know, he was being punished and he was a kid, and he was a kid punishing a littler kid with the same punishment he had. That's what I felt.
All right. I mean, sure. You're seeing the cycle there because, yeah, Khan was exiled, so you're going to be exiled.
And in this episode, I kind of lost what little bit of being enamored by Khan that this audio drama has given me. I've lost that in this episode. Like, the glass shattered, and he's back to being just a piece of crap to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't.
Which I guess they needed to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, because you need him to show his true colors. And I guess it's also to set it up that without the tempering influence of Marla to rein him in, to show him his better angels, as Sulu mentioned a couple episodes ago, he's just going to go off the deep end, especially with the loss of her is going to even make that worse. So I can see where they're setting up, because we have to get to that maniac that's in Wrath of Khan, and we still have like another 15 years for him to be stranded there. So they got to do a lot in these next two episodes.
Every genetically modified tyrant is a ship's historian, they say.
Yes, and it is a long road getting from there to here, but the longest road is episodes 1 through 7. Shortest part of the road is episodes 8 and 9. But
I'm hoping 8 and 9 are going to pull me back. They might. What happens next? Is it the ship? Is it the kids going dancing?
Yeah, that's the thing where I thought Khan does have a point.
Okay.
So the dancing part really annoyed the crap out of me. I mean, it's just like bad music, and we get it
new
that
edition
Ivan had
is
the,
not bad. New
he
edition,
had the boombox. It wasn't
Stop
new edition.
It's new edition. Don't put that on them. That was not new edition.
But I can see the Elborians being crafty, making it so that they did exactly what Khan accused Del Mondo of doing, which is to expose their plan so that they would have no choice but to go along with the alliance. I think that turned Khan too, and I don't think they're as innocent as Marla proposes. There's this other thing. I don't know if it's going to come into play, Albie. I think some of the stuff that might have confused you here, where you say, oh, I don't know what's going on, it's because there was so much needless back and forth about where are we going to live, and we're going to build the ship here, and you're going to drink enough water so that the cavern empties out. Then we're going to blow out the end of the cavern and take off, and my engineers say it's great. And it sounds ludicrous. It sounds like total BS. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is. They're just stringing them along. Maybe they think they're dumb.
But is it any more BS than this is a Star Trek episode?
John, fair point. What I'm saying is I can see Khan's point here for not entirely trusting the Elborians and just using them to his own ends. Anyway, he thinks he is using them to his own ends.
I think this is my, you know, I'm gonna call my shot on this. I am thinking that they're maybe hiding something, but for the most part, they are being upfront, because I feel that something's going to go with the Elborians, that it's not going to be what Khan thinks it is, but because he expects to be betrayed, he's going to like strike first, and he's going to like make something bad. And I'm thinking that because when Khan in the movie, you know, tells Kirk what happened, he doesn't mention them at all, which makes me think that what went wrong with them was entirely his fault. Because if some other alien had come down and done something to him in that way, he would have put them on this list of, and here's, this is another thing about this planet that screwed me. This happened to us, and this happened to us, and this happened to us, and this happened to us. But he didn't mention them at all, unless, I don't think, right?
No. This is all new for the audio drama.
Yeah,
great in the extended cut of Star Trek 2.
Yeah, he didn't say anything about them at all, which makes me think that it's because he knows, he screwed that up. We're live! I didn't say it. that was his fault. It was, so whatever happened was his fault. I may be pinning you know, a lot on that speculation, but that's why I think. And it's also more tragic if it's that case, if it's just because he really just can't imagine trusting someone or someone behaving altruistically because of his, what was it, the lack of imagination, whatever mm-hmm. Marla said, failure of imagination. And again, the tragedy is compounded because he still can't get past it with Kirk. Like it's, you know, he keeps repeating the same mistakes, and that's why he can't win, even though by all rights he should win.
Yeah, you know, I'm still holding out some.
I'm not particularly hoping for it.
I'm holding out. Like I'm still waiting for that other Alborian shoe to drop. I think that they're not representing themselves wholly the way for what they really intend. And the fact that Delmonda still seems to be alive, unless Lear is lying about that.
That could be the lie.
Yeah. Then we'll see. Maybe that's the red herring. It would be funny if this, because think about Star Trek. What is Star Trek's message? Is optimism and collaboration and decency. And what if all of Khan's misguided instincts that are so anti-Star Trek turn out to be true in this? I think Rick's head would explode. But it's also, it would make for keeping the character a little bit more rounded and interesting because, damn it, he was right. He's a maniacal villain, but he was also right. That to me would be an interesting way to go with this. And maybe that's what Kali or Rosalind is trying to really ascertain here. The whole blaming Kirk thing, the whole, maybe that's just her way to get Starfleet to give her what she needs. Invoke the name of the majestic Kirk and say that you're going to cast aspersions on his legacy. Of course, they're going to bring you here to disprove you. She's an augment. She's wily. She's smart. Mm-hmm. And only Tuvok has her number. Mm-hmm. Maybe Kirk has nothing to do with it all. It's just another red herring for her. That would be interesting as well. I can see now, I guess with this episode, it's awakened my speculation and maybe caring to see where this goes because I found some subtle and interesting character beats in this one. And maybe I just discovered that now. Like I was trying to figure out, why am I liking this one better than the other ones? But in talking to you guys about it, I'm discovering why. I'm figuring it out. So I don't know if I'm going to be right. But
hopefully I'll catch on.
Well, but again, Albie, you're not wrong for saying that you're confused because I think a lot of this was, again, needless plot filler about how they're going to move and where they're going to move and half they're going to go to the other part of the planet to a different cave system and they have hydroponics, but it's only going to feed half and we'll figure out. And it's just, honestly, it's nonsense. That's why I left all that stuff out of the synopsis because you just want to stick to the broad plot strokes and maybe some of the character beats.
It's the same as the Diatomaceous Earth. Like it's tech talk for no reason. Like you don't even have to say all that. And did anything come of that? Like there was spent like 5 minutes explaining the Diatomaceous Earth and like this, they can't get through this and we have to do it this way. And I was completely with you, Chris. Like, why didn't, if you can make, cause surely Kirk wouldn't leave them there without replicators. Of course they've got replicators. Like just make.
No. They didn't have replicators in TOS.
They didn't have
that technology. No.
They make.
Yeah. I think there's actually a chef behind the door.
They had thing where you could put the card in.
The card.
I'm not really sure if they ever said
the automat food thing.
Yeah. It's almost like an automat. Oh, okay. It's like Enterprise where a chef puts the pie behind the glass.
It's ambiguous,
but there is still a chef. It's not just like Earl Grey hot.
Yeah. Cause they're still cooking like turkey dinners and mashed potatoes in Star Trek VI, was it?
Yeah. They still have a galley in Star Trek VI.
Then that actually makes that that whole thing a little more palatable to me.
I think the other shoe that's going to drop still is that they're the food source for that race to survive.
You know what, dude? When you said that, I was just like, oh, ha ha, Albie, but I think you might be right.
It would kind of make sense that they're basically, you know, they're because I think someone actually used the word herding I think in this episode, like they're basically it's corralling or something like that. Yeah. Kind of like you're getting your livestock all in one place.
And it would make sense, and it would be a cool like X minus one last line of an episode where, of course, we are going to consume you to survive. You know, something that's just plain.
Yeah, but
well, and they're going to eat bones and all. It's a good source of calcium.
I was going to say, but they can, if that were the case, they could just overpower them. But I guess maybe, It's just easier to.
Yeah, you know what? They're making them a little bit buff. They're making them move all this stuff.
Yeah,
they're bringing the reserve food to the other side of the planet.
Yeah,
get some wagyu, right?
Augments. Yeah,
and it also they're using them as a labor force to set up the caverns that they're going to need to survive. So why not? I was just like, oh, come on, that would be it. But now,
yeah. Well, it's a cookbook. It's the classic, right?
So,
why build them a ship though? What is that about? Is that just them going?
Maybe they're not. Yeah. Maybe they're just lying.
Or maybe they are building a ship, but it's not going to be for them. But right. they still have to do it. So therefore, oh, we're not doing this for us. We're doing this for you. Just as to keep the facade up. Right. And to keep, actually, and also maybe to keep Khan on the hook. Because otherwise he will murder them.
That's true. Like, that's your carrot, I guess, right?
Yep. Yep.
So who ends up taking the ship? Do we find out yet?
No, they haven't even built it yet.
No, it's not built.
It's a ship. It's a ship built for four is what they're saying.
Oh, four. That's what it was. And who are the four?
I don't know. The final four.
The final four. Well, you got one is
Dean Stockwell. Two. The other one's Ellen, that bitch Ellen, and Ty. I'm spoiling a 20-year-old show, but
the amazing Ty.
And Boomer, of course, it's Boomer.
Boomer, you need Boomer.
Actually, it's Linda Park in this one. It's Linda, ooh, Linda Park, not Grace Park. Star Trek, not Battlestar.
I would give both Linda and Grace Park a seat on that ship. But now, does the baby count as one of the four
You don't
people?
Just give them a seat. You ask them, do you want to lie down?
That's true. Oh, my God. Yeah, baby.
Oy.
Anyway.
We're problematic.
I think of Grace Park and Linda Park, and two words spring to mind. Chris Sandwich. That was a joke that Gilbert Gottfried gave on Wings. So I'm bringing whole Gilbert Gottfried thing around.
I'll bring it back to the New York thing as well. If you're in the middle, that would make you Central Park.
Ooh. Awesome. Iron's goat knows the bowling score. All right, so we got a lot more to talk about, and I need to find out more about this episode from my two friends, Christopher DeFilippis and the beautiful John Irons. And we'll do that right after this break. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back to Trexploration. I'm Albie, and we are back. I'm with the beautiful John Irons and Christopher DeFilippis, and we are talking about Star Trek Con, Episode 7, I Am Marla.
Marla.
I still don't know what the hell's going on in this episode. Should I listen to it again?
No.
Should I wait to just go through them all at once? Maybe.
I think that maybe you should listen to the end. And then what I find helps a lot of times is when you know where something is going and you listen back or you reread a book that you know, you pick up stuff because you know where it's headed that the author planted in for you to realize that maybe you didn't realize it first, and it's like oh he said it right here, oh how could I have missed that, because you're a human being. So maybe a lot of that stuff will have new context once you know the end game.
Did anything so far prick up your ear that said, oh, that's a good writing technique, that's something that they're going to come back to, and you stuck a pin in it in your brain, or do you try to ignore that when you're enjoying content?
No, like, again, you're talking about like Chekhov's gun, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Things like that.
There are things like that. I mean, there's one thing then when I did listen back, Marla said something to the fact that it's to die for, it'll kill me or something like that, right before she and Khan part for the last time. And she goes into the eel bath. So there was stuff like that. And I don't know if that was an exactly good example of it being like a positive experience for me. It seems a little cheap in retrospect. But John, you had a long opinion about a lot of stuff that you sent to the chat.
I did.
Can you read it or summarize it or make a small novelization about it?
I can read it.
Novella, I guess that would be.
Yeah. I think it'll probably go faster after I read it. So this was inspired after me listening to your guys, your doubled episode, your 5-6 episode.
5-6?
5-6.
I don't know. 38?
Six in one hand and five in the other. All right. So listen to your 5-6 con episode now. I tried commenting on YouTube, but I'm listening on my phone. It doesn't matter. Couldn't do it. All right.
And I'm wearing slacks.
Tuvok, I had no problem at all with his behavior because you guys were like, Tuvok is like being out of character. I said, I think you guys are missing how smart his behavior was. We know from Voyager he's trained in undercover ops or whatever. By going to Lear and effectively agreeing with her, he got her to give up more information than anyone else has. He presented himself as an ally who, unlike the emotional human, quote unquote, is only interested in the truth, not any particular narrative. The old good cop, bad cop routine, regardless of what he personally may or may not believe about Khan and Kirk, it was a smart play to get Lear to open up. And we see that kind of come to fruition this episode. He like heard all of her evidence. He's like, yeah, no, you're full of crap. I'm not buying it. I'm going to keep spying on you. In general, sounds like I'm enjoying the show more than any of you guys on either podcast. Shout out to that Star Trek podcast. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I love the show. In fact, I agree with what most of y'all are saying. It just doesn't bother me as much. My biggest disagreement with it again, I think all of you, is the idea that this is supposed to be a redemption story for Khan. I'm not getting that at all. He's always been intelligent and charismatic and strong and empirically awesome. He's also always been driven and narcissistic and megalomaniacal and violent and empirically unstable. I think this show explores more of the nuance, but I think it does the show a disservice to make it seem like they're trying to make him all cuddly. It's like we saw him before on this. I tried to do this analogy. It didn't quite work, but I'm gonna live it to the audience. It's like we saw him before on standard TV, and now we see him in HD. There's a difference between adding more detail and changing the picture entirely. And I think so far, at least, they've only been doing the former.
Very good.
That's my two bits. That's my two shakes.
Chris.
Khan and HD.
Khan and HD?
No. With that shaved chest.
I'm telling you. Where did he get that busted Starfleet emblem that he's wearing all throughout the Wrath of Khan?
Maybe we find out. Maybe that the whole reason for the audio drama is to find out.
Maybe
it was Marlis.
Yeah, maybe he makes it out of diatomaceous earth.
Possible, unlikely, the way it comes together.
So Rick had a great joke. He was he asked me for whatever reason. I couldn't figure it out. He's like, did you ever see the episode of The Simpsons where everybody thinks that there's an alien, but Homer thinks he's seeing an alien, but it's Mr. Burns sleepwalking? And I said, yes, actually, I do remember that. He says, that's how he pictures the Albonians. So I can see, get a picture of that while you guys discuss among yourselves. But
for me, I think Khan, at least to me, seems like he is a lot less intelligent than he thinks he is. And this episode kind of shows it.
I think that's probably correct. Yeah.
And maybe that's why they're steering us back to the Khan we know from Star Trek II, maybe. But it seems like very different than the Khan we got to know in the first few episodes. And I think one of the examples of that is maybe he seemed to.
it's kind of blown out on my screen. I don't know how it's coming across on your screen, but anyway. And there's us on.
Hey. Oh,
it's me watching me watching me.
Right.
Wow, are we far behind or is my camera still off?
No.
Your camera's still off on the live feed.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not.
It's on for us, but whatever's showing on the... You just came back on the live feed.
Oh, well...
And we're back!
Anyway, we're getting all meta here. Where were we?
One of the things that stuck out was when Marla was dying. or when they had to make the decision to like euthanize her brain to keep her body alive for Penelope or Kali, was he thought that just because the aliens had some advanced technology that they could just cure her with magic or technology that seemed like magic to him, and he couldn't accept the fact that they couldn't. So, and that seemed a little like Mentakin to me, or just like less developed than we assume he is at the time.
I agree with you. And I think that's kind of a consistent, I don't know if that's a consistent failing in the writing or if it's a consistent failing in the character, that when something doesn't go the way he wants, like, oh, they're against me. That might just be, you know, part of his personality, which would make sense.
Like a little baby throwing a tantrum.
Like a little kid throwing a tantrum and
bulldozing the back of his house.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all against me. So I guess the best way to put it is I can explain it in a way where it's not a character flaw. It's just a character trait. But it feels kind of like a character flaw if you also want me to believe that this is the same master strategist guy who, you know, where every time something goes in, but it's also consistent with, you know, thinking you're the center of the universe and thinking everyone's against you, which is also part of his character. So I don't know. Like, I'm like, I can let it slide. I just don't particularly enjoy it, I guess. It's probably the best I can give him.
That being said about what he did, I don't see myself doing something different. If like the love of my life is dying on a table, I would be begging for anything rational or irrational, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it also speaks to his selfishness because he's not thinking about her. He's not thinking about the baby. He's thinking about how is this going to affect me? So the fact that, you know, it's supposed to like his last gasp. He's like, you don't die. I forbid it. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to be like some like a poignant thing, I think. But again, it's kind of a clunker. Well, in a scene that I thought was okay, but it was just like, I think we already get that Khan is really only caring about Khan and Khan's needs. That is one of the constants that we see in this, unless Marla, you know, half Nelsons him down or full Nelsons him down to do something decent.
I'm gonna maybe give them more credit than they've earned with that. Don't die. I forbid it. He knows, based on experience, that anything that he says to someone with the brain worm has to do.
I like it.
What he says, even if it doesn't make sense, even if it's like it, you know, if it like fight or come out of that tree. So maybe he's is like kind of on some level, it's like a last ditch effort. Don't die.
Okay. Like, because there's
do you have to do what I tell suggestion. You to do? Don't die. Not even rationally, but maybe like. I realize I'm being maybe overly generous, but it kind of works narratively.
It fits.
That also points out a real flaw in the way they're portraying the Seti eels in this series. How fast do these dumb things grow? Marla gets taken out of the water. The eel is already in her brain, and it's already what maybe 20 minutes has passed. Since they've gotten her out of the water, and the eel is already too big and too entwined in her brain to take it out safely,
seems unrealistic.
I mean, but in the movie, then they put the thing in his ear, and he just kind of struggles for like a minute, and then it's under, right?
How does it end up coming out of Chekhov's big rubber ear? Because they got it out in that, right?
For whatever reason, when Terrell kills himself, because they don't want to, and then they take that wrist thing off. Then whatever the other eel that's in Chekhov's head, he screams and he faints and the eel comes, I guess what, because its brother died?
Decides to leave?
I don't know. Yeah. I'm fine with vague and hazy eel behavior, because we don't know, and they especially don't know. You know, we don't know how, like, there could have been 20 of them in the water that bit her, and so the venom, like, she got a super dose of it, so she's more susceptible more quickly. Like, who knows?
Brings up a question, because the eel was already in her brain. Was she of sound mind when she made the decision to sacrifice herself? I think so.
I think that sounds like what she would say.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that she was, and it also gave her, you know, a chance for her exit speech, where I'll be with you when you look at the stars, and
that was
when
nice.
You close your eyes, and when you take a poo, and I'll be there every breath you take.
I won't be with you take. In all your moments. Did you ever see that? This is a deep cut. This SNL skit, I think from forever ago, Patrick Swayze was the guest, and they did a parody of Ghost. And he came back and he's like watching her, and like she's just doing all this gross stuff. It's like
doing her toenails or something.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was. Yeah. It was like, you know, she's eating Sloppy Joes and just like just being a horrible, disgusting person. It's like, no, yeah, just, no,
took the romance all out of it. Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah,
that was funny. I did like the swimming scene. It, to me, it like evoked maybe the beginning of Jaws. That's what I was feeling. Like, I don't know if she was nude. I don't know if she brought a bikini with her when she was exiled. But I didn't think it was going to be an eel. I thought it was going to be like something like creature going to bite her. Like,
see, and I was, yeah, I don't know, but like maybe. I feel like a lot of times they don't necessarily do enough to kind of set the scene. Cause I was imagining more of like a little pool, like, not like a, yeah, not big enough to swim in. Right. I'm imagining like almost like a hot tub, like, you know, there's there's small pools of this.
So I guess,
you know, kind of
the
sulfuric
eel would work for that.
Huh?
Well, that was another thing that they set up, was the fact that you can't swim. I'll cling to the side. Deep enough. I guess that's how she couldn't get away from the eel, because she can't swim. But if you're clinging to the side and you just lowered yourself into the pool, can't you just like pop yourself out of the pool?
Well, not if you're in the pool and you're like, so like your arms are like kind of resting on the edge of the pool and the rest of you is in the water, you know, and especially we don't know, like, these little things, if there's, you know, 20, 100, we don't know. Like, this may be a nest of theirs, you know. If it's just one, then yeah, you could probably kind of brush it off.
But. See, I mean, what she needed to do was to call the concierge to make sure the eels hadn't booked their spa day for the same day that she booked her spa day. Yeah. All of this could have been avoided had she just been courteous.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I mean, that's just pool safety 101, is you always bring a phaser to,
right?
to the pool.
Mm-hmm. And,
well, and you're the first human in this hot spring. Right? On this planet, and you're just like chilling. I don't know. I'd be afraid of everything.
You know, now that you mention it, it really doesn't make sense. They're not scanning constantly anytime they enter a new area.
Yeah.
Because just like the world. I mean,
with the dino scanner should have been able to pick those eels up in no time.
I mean, even like they should be scanning for eels, and really they should be scanning for anything, because they were in the middle of, like, you know, kind of cataloging the organisms on the planet. So they still don't even know what's out there. They did it for, I guess, in universe a couple of days before the eels attacked, and it seems like they kind of stopped doing it. But like, I mean, they know there's no fish. That's, which is another reason you should be scanning constantly. It's like, well, maybe we can scan for fish or something.
What's
around? Like,
maybe I'm more scared to see creatures than others. I don't know.
Maybe the dino scanner can only be calibrated to something you know to look for, like an unstable planet core,
of the Jetso.
Okay, so they don't have like just like regular life scan tricorders?
Apparently not.
I mean,
I guess laziness kills. I mean, she could have scanned it.
It doesn't make sense.
She thought to take a phaser, but not a tricorder. I don't know.
It is well established at this point that this planet is trying to kill you.
Yes.
Most things on this planet are trying to kill you. And they do not move in a way that is consistently cautious with that understanding.
Mm. And they kind
especially
of hamstrung
to be these
themselves.
Big survivalist entities that they are.
Yeah. Well, for the eel drama in the beginning of the series, finding the queen eel and all that, finding the colony, that was supposed to be for like good action sequence drama sake.
I'm fine with all of that.
But then you wind up undercutting Marla's death because you're absolutely right, John. They should have been able to, the first thing they should have done was scan for eels when they got to the cave because it's such a big threat. Or did they just get complacent? Like you said, they're lazy. But it does the characters a disservice, especially if they're supposed to be super smart augments. Why didn't they just scan for it? Because we need Marla to die from an eel bite. That's just the way it is.
They could have done that. They could have scanned and just missed it. Or it could have been, you know, they could have come out of a hole in the rock that they couldn't scan. Like you know.
A real thing. She could have had pregnancy brain. You know, that's a thing.
It is. But I'm like, I don't know. Like, yes, we need
Marla to
die.
You say to your pregnant partner, you got to take the wrapper off before you eat it. You know, stuff like that.
Maybe they did scan, but the Elborians wiped it from their brains.
Ah.
Because they were using the hot spring to sort of stew.
They wanted revenge because they booked the same spa day.
Yep.
Like, how dare they?
This is not going to happen
again.
They
were thinking, Marla's stew.
Well, you know what? We know Marla was killed by one of those eels, but I wasn't expecting it. I guess I was waiting for episode 9 or something, but it surprised me. It shocked me because, like, I just wanted Marla to be a character throughout the whole series, maybe. And I now without her, I'm like, what is my drawback for these next two episodes?
You get to see Colin spiral, which
I guess yeah.
Great.
He's starting. And I love the fact that this actually makes Khan's speech a little more sensible in Wrath of Khan before the Khan when he says, I shall leave you as you left her, buried in the center of a dead planet. Or no, marooned in the center of a dead world, buried alive. So the fact that he's saying that she's in the center of a dead world instead of like on the surface, that makes sense. Buried alive, she's alive, but she's not really living anymore. So it all dovetails nicely with that soliloquy, which might be the most famous line from Wrath of Khan.
How'd you guys feel about Ivan shouting Khan? Did you hate it? Did you love it? Did you miss?
I hate it.
It seemed like he was making fun of us.
I love to hate it, but then I hated to love it. So
it was kind of like that. In the Darkness scream, right?
That was That's just pants. Called. That was completely garbage.
Yeah.
But what did you think, John? I mean, you posed the question.
Yeah.
What did I think? I guess I noted it and then dismissed it. I was like, yeah, that's cute. And then it had no effect beyond that.
Once again, it speaks to me to the missed opportunity to have Ivan and Khan be best buds and to have, like, the last thing Ivan says is just screaming Khan's name in anger and frustration to show that schism. Because we know you only do that when you're so mad at Khan that you're absolutely shaking like this. So,
I think I would have liked it better if he screamed it, but it didn't sound so much like the way Kirk screamed it. Like because any time you just screaming Khan is enough. Khan would have done it.
Yeah, that would have been better, I think.
Yeah, so it didn't sound exactly like it.
It wouldn't have evoked the original that you can't top, and we wouldn't compare the two. Which we automatically did instantly and said, oh, that's just a ripoff.
But it would still reference it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't fussed about that, quite frankly. It doesn't.
What's the next beat?
The next one, Marla is dead. And then he starts spouting because it's coming out of his head. Poetry. It's turned into the Last of Us. He's sprouting.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we have a lot. I think it's Caldridge. I guess it's Maiden who played a dulcimer or something like that. And we're left with him in his agony, in his grief, in his loss. I don't know that there are any more like specific plot beats that we need to get into for this one, because the getting Marla out of the picture really ramps everything up. So that's what I was joking before and saying it's a long road getting from there to here until episodes 8 and 9. But 8 and 9, they got to condense a hell of a lot, because you still have like over a decade worth of time to go through. So they're going to gloss over, I think, most of that.
Well, they already did the kind of, we know they can narratively kind of do the jump ahead, because they did it was like episode 3.
Yeah,
I think.
They did the flash forward.
Yeah, the flash forward to I'll tell him the story. So they could do that again and shave a few years off.
Chris, did you notice how long the episodes are, 8 and 9?
I can let you know in 2 seconds.
Yeah, because are they like 30 minutes or are they 49?
I don't know. Six, seven. I'll let you know in 3 seconds. 3 shakes of a lamb's tail. Talk amongst yourselves. Con. I just got a call. Every time I close out the thing that has
cool
the...
Cool it now.
Every time I close out the thing that has the screeners, the advanced
screeners.
The thing
screeners, with the stuff.
The thing with the stuff, it makes me log back in.
My guess is like 35 minutes each, but we'll see.
That's what they've been, right?
Yeah, but the last one might be like an hour, I don't know.
No, 36 minutes for 108 and 42 minutes for 109. So, okay, comparable.
I don't know.
About an hour left. I don't fit it all in.
I don't know who's in charge of this.
Who is in charge? I demand to speak to the manager.
Someone should do a better job of noting the tone of where they go to a commercial break and the commercial that comes out. Because it'll be like the saddest, most like poignant scene with the melancholy music and then like use cars.
All right. Are you suffering from erectile dysfunction?
Yeah, like maybe can't do it, but like just try better. Like it's like something. Like
yep. No commercials for me.
It also doesn't help that Ren Schmidt is reading a lot of the live breaks. So
oh. Yeah.
You know, you might go from Marla dying to Marla saying you should book a trip on Trivago. I don't know.
To study out the fight.
You can come see my desiccated corpse.
Now I feel like I'm missing something not listening to it with commercials.
No, it's...
I got to go back.
No, you're not. You got the better end of the deal.
Them at all cost.
No, I've been listening to the released ones in my car after we've done the shows when they come out.
Are they the same as our screeners?
Yeah, they just have the commercials. That's all. Okay. So...
I would hope so.
So I'm going to guess that the people who are listening to them as they're released are going to have at least another 5 minutes or so, because who knows how long the commercials are.
That's me. I'm listening to them as they come out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of my disappointments thus far has been, I think we've been hearing about this and they've been working on this story for probably most of my daughter's life at this point. And I feel if they invested that much time, it should be better than what we're getting.
Well, I think you give that a little too much. It's saying that maybe Nick Meyer had a broad stroke of an idea for this based on an idea by Nicholas Meyer. But
based on
who
Star
knows,
Trek by Gene Roddenberry.
But yeah. Who knows how much time they gave Kirsten and David to flesh this out.
How much guidance Nick gave them.
You know, it just
if they're like they gave us 3 months,
you know,
and
Mike
this is
Sussman
what we got.
Has been thinking about the Archer spinoff for the last 2.5 years, but it's just now breaking. And if he does get to go to some kind of series with it, they're going to have some kind of deadline. So it's not like he's started writing it and he's just tweaking the 10 scripts that he has endlessly. It's just concept to execution. So you've been hearing about the idea of something like this for 13 years.
I'm going to take it back and say, not blame the writers, but I'm going to blame myself for hyping it up too much in my head this whole time.
It is an Albie problem.
An Albie problem, yes. 100%.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Because if it was like Star Trek Scouts and like it was like, hey, brand new con drama dropping, you know, and we found out the day before and not 5, 6, 17 years before, then it would have been like, oh, this is cool. This is great. That's, you know, bonus. But we've been waiting for so long, whether it's going to be a movie, a miniseries, a made-for-TV movie, anything. But then we get the audio drama and then we get this and it's just taken so long. Maybe that's it.
That actually was my experience. So maybe that's why I'm not as hard on it.
It's just, I don't, what's the word when you waited so long for something that by the time you get it, you don't want it anymore?
Marriage? Sorry.
Okay. On that, why don't we go to, I think that we've done the main discussion here. So who's your episode crush, Sean Irons?
My episode crush, was this the, did this have the, no, I guess this was the last one with the conversation between, yeah, so I can't count that one. So let me think.
It was,
oh, you know what? Here you go. This is a nice touch, that they did. And I was noticing it. I've been noticing it through the episodes. Del Monte, the leader of the bananas. As the more conversations he has with Khan, the more like the firmer their relationship gets, the less there is the kind of the crazy echo, and the more it just sounds like a regular conversation. Because they're becoming more like, if you listen back,
less echo.
First one, it's almost kind of hard to understand him even. But like now, when the two of them talk, it just sounds like he's talking to another person. So I'm going to say that even though he may turn out to be a baddie, he's gonna be my and I felt like, you know, he's been, again, he could be very deceptive, but it's like, no, we're going to punish him together. Like, no, like he's been super reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Like even as new situations arise, I feel like he hasn't been a pushover, but he's been fair and held his ground. So he's I'm gonna call him my episode crush.
Okay, how about
you? I'm calling him him. I'm assuming it's a him.
Who's your episode crush?
I did like that they were transitioning him to a less echoey head voice to a normal voice, but that also added to my confusion.
I can see that.
My episode crush was naked, pregnant, hot spring Ren Schmidt.
That's fair.
I definitely pictured that in my head.
As did I.
I don't think that's a
And I can't lie about it. That's what
I wasn't even thinking about the pregnant thing either.
Oh, I did the second time.
So,
I mean, the second time I thought about it.
No baby bump yet, right?
There has to be, right?
I don't know.
How many months are we into this?
If she's going to stay alive.
This is my fantasy. There's no baby bump yet, okay?
I pictured a plump bump.
Okay. Plump bump. Wasn't that Grape Ape sidekick?
I think so.
My episode crush is Samuel Taylor Caldridge. What's your favorite part of the episode, John Irons?
Wait, who is Samuel Taylor Caldridge? What is that?
They just kept on quoting Caldridge poetry in this entire thing. Why do you hate Caldridge? In Kublai Khan stately do decree, blah, 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 blah.
That was their shorthand to remind you that Khan is really smart.
Right, and so is Marla.
Yeah, that they are intellectuals and they have intellectual debates. Even though they both do dumb things in these episodes.
Favorite part of the episode, Joe?
You know, you talk about the love to hate it, where they, where the alien is like, "What is this thing called music?" I'm like, oh my god! Like, you talk about the most cliche.
We have never heard of such.
We have evolved beyond such things. Oh my goodness! This is like poetry for my mouth. Okay, dude, just fine. It was so dumb. It made me laugh.
I did like that, and I think they pointed something out there that maybe might be a callback for later. Was that they probably don't have vocal cords?
Yeah, they did point that out.
Yeah, they said that.
Why point that out? Because we pretty much assume that, right? So maybe there's going to be at the end speech where they're talking about eating the humans. Maybe they're just sitting around listening to that boombox and talking out their mouths. I don't know.
And they're like, these vocal cords are delicious. It's so that, I can floss and eat at the same time.
It's like the pate. It's like the best part. It's the veal. I was going to say, it's like when Khan and his people kill them all so that they can't hear them scream.
The silence of the lambs. The late, great Hannibal Lecter.
Thank you, Clarice. What's your favorite part of Clarice?
He's a good man, strong man, Hannibal Lecter. I'm sorry, what?
I was asking Clarice, not you, what his favorite part of the episode was.
Probably, well, I already mentioned pregnant, naked Renschmidt. Mm-hmm. But the other part would be, McGivers dying and choosing her child over her kid. Or over herself, and that scene. I think Khan kind of ruined it for me, but I enjoyed the way we lost McGivers.
Okay,
I thought that's the hook. That even though it ended her in the show, I think so far, unless they do flashbacks or something else happens, that's the thing that made me want to put off episode 8 and 9.
What do you mean?
And enjoy it more.
What do you mean Khan ruined it for you?
I'm just not liking him like I did. I had a crush on him for the first half of this audio drama, I think. And I think right there, I don't know if it was the acting, the writing, or just the way I was feeling in my head when I experienced the scene, but I just, like, he went from a yum to an ick for me.
Okay. The worm turned. The SETI eel turned for Albie. My favorite part of the episode is got to be... naked, pregnant, Marla McGivers.
It's a good part, right?
You know, okay. Anytime some more women want to come on this podcast.
we do need them.
I wasn't going to say that, but then Albie pointed it out and just like, I already talked about having an erection in Central Park, so I might as well.
The quiet part out loud.
It's like when you say, try not to think of a naked, pregnant Ren Schmidt in a hot spring.
What are you going
to
do?
You can't not picture it.
What are you going to do?
What do we do next, Chris?
We got some trivia. We should ask John some trivia and embarrass him.
Yes, I'll be John's backup. I'm going to play on John's team because that's how we do it on Captain Game Show.
You are welcome to ask me trivia, but I'm long past being embarrassed by that.
I cannot read trivia right now. My eyes are purely decorative.
If you don't know this first one, though, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Just hold the card up and I'll read it, and I promise I won't look at the answer.
All right. Three questions, John. That's what we got you for.
Okay.
Three questions.
What name does Lieutenant Commander LaForge give the Borg drone designated as third of five in the Next Generation episode, I, Borg?
Hugh.
Thank you.
Hugh.
Already, he made a return in Picard. Picard, yeah. Season 2.
I brought bigger men, but down bigger men than you, Picard.
What are you looking at? That was the name of the sequel.
God, that was the dumbest. That was... like Striker.
That was the wrong Gene Simmons.
In the Voyager.
Gene Simmons, okay. Like an old lady.
You got one. One of three.
I got one.
One out of three. Write your answers down below and tell us how you did.
In the Voyager episode, vis-a-vis, who says that advanced subspace geometry was the only class he paid attention to at Starfleet Academy?
Tom?
Tom Paris.
Ding, 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 ding.
All right. I feel like we've had this, but it's...
I'm sorry. The Paris was implied. That is who I meant. Yes. So, yeah.
Paris is always implied.
I thought
wrong
you meant
Paris.
Actually, no, I'm sorry. It's Tom Bombadil. Okay.
Tom Bosley. It was Tom Bosley.
Yes.
It was the Moops.
It was Tom Bosley above the garage.
That was actually his job in Happy Days. He just
America's Dad.
Time. Agent.
I hate to interrupt. Did you watch The Wrong Paris yet on Netflix?
Mm-mm. The Wrong what?
What is
that? The Wrong Paris, it's called.
No.
Miranda Cosgrove. I highly recommend it.
iCarly. Okay.
The Hurdle got me. Yeah. Okay. The Hurdle got me. She's great in rom-coms now.
After playing the charitable Edith Keeler in The City on the Edge of Forever, this actress went on to star as a less than kind character on Dynasty. Name the actress.
Joan Collins?
Joan Collins, yes. You got three out of three.
We had
John.
That one before.
I feel like we did.
You did have that one before.
Both of us.
All right.
You did have that one.
So we can shred
you
them
know
after
what?
We read
them. Do you think we can't have gone through
let's
an
go
entire
one more time.
I am riding high. Even if I missed the last one, I will still feel like a winner. So feel free to give me something.
One more card.
You got me for four.
Yes. Four cards. We asked Allison Pregler, I remember. She couldn't think of Joan Collins. She had it pictured in her head, but she couldn't think of the name. So we did. That was Calling the Beagle. Can we get another card, sir?
Yeah, I got another card. Okay.
John Irons, we got you for three more questions.
Whoa, I don't think we've done enough episodes for me to get through this entire deck, but I have another deck that I never even opened. So I'll open that for next time.
All right.
Who summons Lieutenant Commander Data and inadvertently Lore as well in the Next Generation episode, Brothers, Identical Brothers?
Summons.
Two of a kind.
Yes.
Who summons? They walk alike, they talk alike, they even positronic brain alike.
I guess it's got to be Dr. Sung.
Fully functional.
Right?
Dr. Who Sung?
Oh, come on. There's been like eight of them. The first one, the main
Soon?
One. The
he
one that's played by Brent Spiner.
Noonien, Dr. Noonien Soon? Yeah, it's Noonien Soon. Yes.
That's a popular name in Star Trek for some reason.
Noonien, like Khan Noonien Singh.
We're going to give that one to you, John.
Thank
Dr. Noonien Soon. Noonien Singh. Yes.
Great makeup, by the way.
In the Voyager episode, Fury, which was a tank movie with Brad Pitt, if I recall. What is an older Kes's objective when she returns to Voyager?
I've never seen it.
Oh, that's pretty
so
good.
I'm going to say, is it vengeance? Because she's pissed, right? Oh, actually, you know what? Maybe I have seen it.
Yeah, picture walking down the hallway, blowing people up.
Is that right? Is that
really bad old age
makeup? I mean, I guess tangentially.
Because she was mad, right? She was mad. I don't remember what she was mad about.
She was mad because she needed to turn down the air conditioning because she was having hot flashes because she was going through the change.
Wow-wee, you're so sexist.
Wow.
To rescue her past self, who she believes was abducted and corrupted by the crew. So vengeance is a part of that.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
she blamed
was
the crew for
episode?
Taking advantage of her because she was too young to make her own decisions.
That sounds
kind of
deep. Was that a good episode?
Wasn't that Kes's return after they booted her off the show?
And it was a little rough because she had become from a girl to a woman in the time she was gone. So when they did the flashbacks of younger Kes, she still looked like older Kes. Yeah. So it was kind of... But other than that, it was okay. It was well written.
Identical Cousins, which original series actor also appeared in the 1957 movie version of Gunfight at the OK Corral?
Ooh, is that one I don't know.
57. Is one? Can I get a supplementary hint? Is this one of the main three?
It is one of the main three, and
I'm gonna say Nimoy.
So close, but no cigar, sir.
I'll go with Kelly.
It was D. Kelly.
Ah, okay.
You lose, sir. Good day.
No.
You cheated. You get nothing.
I got
it's
three
not bad.
Out of three.
I'd say you got five out of three. You did pretty good.
I said not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah,
do we have any Trek and Tells? Because I don't think I have
any Trek and Tells. Do you have something? First, I want to show this.
Oh, okay. Trek and Tell.
This came in the mail. It was addressed to Miss Serenity Burge. Just take my word for it. I don't want to show you the address because I have a lot of enemies. All right. Okay.
What's going on with you over
there? In case
you're
wondering if Albie was in witness protection, the answer is yes.
Yeah, I ate a piece of pizza. We have the blank page. Very important.
Blank page. I'm glad it made it.
The frame behind the page.
Yeah.
Now let's see which one's this one. Okay, we'll save the best for last, and we'll start with this one.
Ah, there's the Albie.
It's beautiful.
Albie.
So
nice.
You finally got your portraits from Liz and Linda.
I did. We are going to frame them this coming week. We got them right before Serenity went back to her mother's. So
we have Albie.
A nice, like a mat and a nice frame. And then I really appreciate the separating paper because in the... Heat, the Florida heat in the mailbox, it would have all melted together probably.
Is it crayon?
Had we not
is that like wax? Is that
100%
is that
crayon?
Medium?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Okay. And the beautiful Rennie, Serenity Lynn Bird.
That's so nice.
It's so
her
cute.
Channel is linked down below on our page.
Thank you, Linda. This is the third time we've shown these as a trick and tell, and well worth it. We should show them every time.
Yep. And we'll show them when they're framed. We'll show them
exactly.
On the wall.
Very nice. Very good.
Seriously, Linda, get back to us. I want to put these on T-shirts. Let me know if it's okay.
I think it's implied that it's okay.
Yes, and there could be an expanded universe here. We do have many guest stars. Just saying. I just love these. I mean, like, they look good on screen, but until you see them in person, you really can't appreciate them. They're just absolutely gorgeous.
Identical, like, cousins.
I think I paid like almost $90 for a caricature of Rennie at Disney, and this blows that away. You know, I think that this is a business.
Well, that's made with love, is what that's made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Oh my God, they're so good. They're so good. Hopefully she takes commissions.
It's like vocal cords. It's a secret ingredient.
So that is my Trek and Tell. I have others, but that's the one I'm most excited about right now.
John, any Trek and Tells, or should we move on to final thoughts?
We can move on to final thoughts, I don't believe.
All right. So why don't we start with you, John? Final thoughts and ratings out of 5.
We're getting to the end. And I am curious to know how it ends. I would not say that I'm super invested, but I'm saying I'm moderately invested in how this goes. Honestly, I'm probably more invested in what's happening up on the ship in the quote unquote present than I am with what's happening with Khan et al. Because there's still kind of a mystery there. There's a potential mystery with the aliens. The Alborians, but the mystery that I'm more interested in is who is this person, and like, you know, all of the unanswered questions that Tuvok has. But I mean, you know, episode wise, hits and misses. So I'm gonna give it I don't do sulfur baths. That's too obvious. I'm going to give it 3 spiked vodkas out of 5.
Ooh. I think
was it vodka? It was vodka, right?
No, it wasn't vodka.
I think so. No? Potato vodka?
No. It was a bottle of wine from their wars. They were going to share it. Yes, it was a bottle of, I forget what they, I listened to it 17 times. It's a bottle of wine.
Merlot.
It's a bottle of
Merlot.
I'm
not drinking any bleeping Merlot.
I heard vodka. I did, because I thought, oh, that makes sense.
No, he was making the vodka, but the wine was left over from their campaign.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. It's on the tip of my tongue. Linda will know because she loves wine. So,
oh, yeah. Are you guys both going to do that?
Yeah, I still have to order. I still have to order my.
Okay, make sure you do, because we got to get those ahead of time so I can edit them.
100%.
All right, because people Christmas morning are going to want to know what that 24th or 5th one tastes like.
We'll see what happens. Albie.
My final thoughts and ratings. I appreciate you guys helping me through this episode. I am less confused. I have more of a handle on it. I'm still as disappointed. I just feel it's being dragged on. Maybe it's just the pacing, and it's not really an episode. It's more of an act of television, I'd say, than an episode of television. But it's spaced out like it's episodes. So it's like no matter what they give me, it's not enough, and I'm just over it. I am looking forward to the last 2 episodes. Hopefully there's something there that surprises me and makes the journey worth it. I'm not really expecting it, but I'm hopeful. As soon as we're done here, I will probably go listen to the next one. I think last time I gave it a 2, I'm going to give it a 3 just because I enjoyed the way we lost MacGyver's. And it's something that I knew happened for most of my life. And it's just nice to check off the list that I was there when it happened instead of just hearing about it. So that's there for something. So I'll give it a 3 out of 5 boomboxes playing Cool It Now. Cool It Now. Chris, final thoughts and ratings on Star Trek Pod, episode
we'll keep, 7, I'll keep mine as simple as possible. The last two episodes, they were in grave danger of losing me. That danger has been abated somewhat with this episode. So I will give it 3.5 brain dead Marla McGivers out of 5. And we want to know what you guys think out there in Trexploration land. Tell us right here on the YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@Trexploration. You can comment below. You can also find us on Patreon if you want to support the show. Patreon.com/Trexploration. Hype our videos on the YouTube channel. Go Super Chats when we're live and
Super
become
chats,
a member
we'll read them all.
Here on the YouTube, become a member there on the Patreons. Support the show any way you can. Reach out to us. Tell us what you think at trexploration.bluesky.social. Email us. You can email us photos and comments and voicemails and all that stuff to trexplorationpod@gmail.com.
Box of 20s. You got space school to go to.
You can send us a shoebox.
You got to pay for it.
Full of 20s for your Rennie Space Camp Fund. P.O. Box 542 Bayport, New York, 11705. That's P.O. Box 542 Bayport, New York, 11705. Give me a thrill. Here's my post office box key. I want to use it. Okay.
Thank you for blurring it for me.
You can also get us one-time support various ways. That's
there are many ways.
Code for PayPal, Zelle, Venmo, and Cash App. They will be on the screen after the episode today. There'll also be links down below. Somehow Albie works that out. He's a wizard when it comes to that
stuff. That's what he does instead of sleeps.
So please just find us, like us, share us, comment, join us in our ongoing Trexploration of all things Star Trek. Just remember that anything that you send us, anything that you comment about, might be used in an upcoming episode of
on a t-shirt.
Trexploration, or put on a t-shirt. Speaking of upcoming episodes and t-shirts, Albie, what's coming up next?
Episode 8 of Star Trek Con, and we're going to be doing some Star Trek Scouts. Woo!
Episode 8 is called Original Sin.
Original Sin. Are we allowed to say what episode 9 is or no? What's the embargo?
It's called...
is that the Guardian of Forever? Maybe if they put the Guardian in Forever in at the end, then I'm like, okay, this is cool.
Eternity is actually a character in Marvel, so he does have a face.
Yeah.
Yes. That's true.
It's just like that picture of like Kirk smiling in the command chair. That's
so. What could possibly happen? What did they set up that still needs to happen in the next two episodes? What do you think is going to be in the next episode? Let's theorize.
Speculate, John.
Man, I thought I was off the clock.
I'm going to fall asleep.
John's Speculation Corner. John's Speculation Corner.
John's Speculation Corner.
We stole that from that sort of podcast.
Thank
you, Scott Madison.
I think the planet's going to explode in the last episode. I think we'll get more clarity about who Lear is in the next episode.
Okay.
They'll tease a little bit. I think we'll get the full story next episode and the conclusion to that story in the last episode. And what else? I think things are going to start going. I mean, not that things have been going great for Khan, but I think he's going to, like, things are going to start to unravel more and more. And this will begin his steep and rapid descent into the hell that, you know, he's in when Kirk encounters him.
I hope the last episode ends with Khan just working out, doing bench presses and shaving his chest. Because then it just all
crunches
ties it together.
800 crunches a day.
Yeah, for an old man, he was buff.
Dude, buff beast now.
The scene with the scene with Lear freaking out reminded me of B'Elanna trying to suppress her Klingon half, or was that Kalar? Maybe both. But yeah, there's something to it. I guess we'll find out. Hopefully it's not all the things we guessed, because that would be boring. But I want to be surprised. I want to be surprised. Chris?
I think that the shoe is going to drop on the Alborians. I think the shoe is going to drop on Lear. And I think chunks of SETI Alpha 6 are going to drop on SETI Alpha 5.
As long as we get to hear Tuvok and Captain Sulu cuddling, I'm good.
Is it wrong that I'm kind of anticipating more characters dying so it'll be easier for me to tell them apart?
Oh yeah,
is that bad?
Too similar, maybe, right? Bad.
Sorry,
but they're not doing that thing where they're like saying their names all the time when they wouldn't share life. So. I want to say they find out. This is my guess. Lear proves that she was right all along, and Sulu just suppresses it, along with Tuvok.
I don't want that.
So if you like this episode, like, share, subscribe, go to our Patreon, donate to the Space Camp money, buy, I can read it backwards again, 1,700 esoteric syllables about Yo Mama. Great book. The first book Serenity ever read cover to cover.
By the beautiful John Irons.
The beautiful John Irons, our guest today. And of course, we have the good book, Quantum Leap Foreknowledge. And Chris also wrote, what is it? It is called The Seeker, a novella of truth. And it's spelled out.
Everybody in a way hates that, I don't know, The Seeker.
Except for Albie, who read it aloud on a train for everyone else in first class.
Wow. Those poor, poor people paid for a first class ticket and you ruined it.
Well, the bartender from Deadpool loved it. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, okay, good.
At least the chapter that I did read him.
Was he there? All right. Was that really him? Was he like?
Yeah, he was really there. Did you see my picture?
Save it for the after show.
We'll put it on the after show. All right. And if you want to hear the after show, the next hour and a half we're recording after this.
Oh my God, no!
Come join our YouTube channel or become a member on Patreon. Any level gets access. So for Trek Exploration, I'm Albie.
I'm Chris.
I'm John.
Peace out. Bye. We'll see you next time.
I cannot do another half hour. Actually,
no,
I can.
It's just 20 minutes.
A half hour I can do. Like, that's like that tops. 20 minutes is 20 minutes is good.
All right. Spam.
Right.
We finally got some fun stuff.
Okay. I'm like,
let's hold up some fun stuff. I really, 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 really love these, Linda. And thank you so much.
Oh, yeah.
It means the world to me.
Bum, bum,
you can
bum,
see my,
bum, 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 bum,
my Captain Game Show chapstick.
Yes.
Yes.
Mine is here on my desk somewhere, but I can't find it.
Oh, I get to
right
read backwards now. You know, a pun is good when folks get mad at you for making them laugh. Chapstick Game Show.